オフィシャル K-1 パッキャスト K-1 バトルキャスト
私やった
You'll get news, fight reviews, and fighter interviews And now, your hosts Michael Shavero and Jonathan Shea
It's good night, Iran!
Hello everybody, I'm Michael Shavello. Great to be with you on another episode of K1 Battlecast, the official podcast of K1 Worldwide. I'm joined as always by my verbal sparring partner from up in Tokyo, Japan. A big g'day to Jonathan Shea. G'day, Jonathan.
G'day, Michael. It's a pleasure as always.
Mate, I tell you what, we are in for an absolute cracker of an episode today. It is jam-packed, Jonathan. We have not one, but two interviews on today's show with Mahmoud Sattari and with Gerard Potterak. Plus, we're going to deep dive into Lutsar's showdown with Mahmoud Sattari on July 7 at Yayoi Arena. That's going to be awesome after Sattari called out Lutsar back in March. We are also going to look at the latest news. There's a little bit of gossip that I'm going to put out there as well. More about that wild card situation in the K1 Max. Plus a very interesting listener question from our mailbag this week about Mike Tyson. So, Jonathan, there is plenty on this show today.
I am down for some juicy gossip, but I'm also a fan of Mike Tyson, so I'm looking forward to that question as well.
Okay, well, why don't we get started? And let's do it by, first of all, deep diving into Lutsar versus Mahmoud Sattari. Jonathan, you were there in March at the Yayoi Stadium where Lutsar defeated Sina Karimian, did so very easily and completely, thoroughly. He dominated Sina Karimian. And then we saw Mahmoud Sattari get into the ring on that night and challenge Lutsar for July 7. What were your thoughts, Jonathan, when Sattari got in the ring and made that personal challenge right there and then to Lutsar?
Well, I almost didn't know what was going on at first because it was so unexpected. But then, okay, you get the sense he's calling him out. And I knew immediately that Lutsar would actually take him up on his offer because the way that Sattari asked him was extremely respectful. And I know above all things, Lutsar is a big fan of like showing respect where he believes respect is due. And, you know, no doubt he's the champ.
It is a brave man to challenge Lutsar, particularly given the form that Lutsar is in and how he continues to improve. But right now, let's deep dive into this fight between Lutsar of China and Mahmoud Sattari of Iran. These are two lean cruiserweights. They've been competing at heavyweight as well. Both of them are fast, both are highly technical, and both never have a dull moment in the ring. I don't think I've ever seen a boring performance from Sattari, and I know I've never seen a boring performance from Lutsar. Let's look at Sattari first. The Iranian holds a stellar record, 20-2 with 12 knockouts, and he's won titles at middleweight through to heavyweight and openweight. Sattari isn't big. He stands at 186 centimeters, weighs 90 kilos. So in terms of tail of the tape, Lutsar will have a 5-centimeter height advantage. And although Lutsar is listed, Jonathan, at 90 kilos, I'm not buying that. I think come fight night, Lutsar will be about 5 kilos heavier, if not more, than Mahmoud Sattari. If you've seen any of Sattari's 12 knockouts, you'll realize that most of them don't stem from raw power, but rather from exquisite timing. Sattari has an ability to read his opponents like a book. He measures range, he masters distance, and when he throws with precision. He's not sloppy. Everything is tight. And when he's honed on target, when the guidance system is functioning, he's hard to stop. Sattari fights orthodox. He has a couple of weapons I like in particular I want to point out here. One is his rear leg round kick to the body. Again, it's the timing mixed with the speed and technique that makes this kick such an effective weapon. If you go back to his fight against Ahmet Kilic in 2019, you'll see Sattari land this rear leg mawashigeri wonderfully to Kilic's body that folds Kilic for the knockout. The timing on it it's superb. There's another Sattari weapon that could come in extremely handy against Lutsar, and that's the overhand right. If you watch Satari's fight against Seiya Tanigawa, he goes swinging with the looping punches and lands the headache maker overhand right on Tanigawa that knocks the Japanese fighter out cold. The way Satari turns the knuckles over with this particular technique, and again, the perfect timing. I mean, Tanigawa's out. He's astral traveling. And against a man who is 5 centimeters taller than him in Lutsar, I would think that if Satari gets on the inside of the Chinese Ivan Drago, this is a weapon he uses as his moneymaker on July 7. Nobody has really tested the chin of Lutsar, and Satari has the necessary nous to do so, particularly with that overhand right. If you watch the second knockout of Tanigawa, the next time they fought, you'll see Satari pop the Japanese with this little diesel piston of a right cross for the knockout. It's so fast. If you blink, you'll miss it. It's exquisite. I love it. The third technique of Mahmud Satari that I absolutely love is his lead hook. This thing is devastating. You see it used in his knockout against Animal Koji. Satari sees Koji drop his right arm and he slides in with the perfect lead hook that tags Koji on the jaw and has the animal doing the chicken dance. Against Yuta Uchida, Satari uses the hook for the knockout again, and this time the hook is shorter. It's harder. The pivot on the lead foot is terrific, and Satari turns the knuckles in and Uchida goes night-night. If you're following Mahmud Satari on social media, you'll see that he's training like an absolute freaking demon for this fight. As well he should be. He needs to be. Lutsar will be the toughest test in Satari's career. And Mahmud Satari will need to be in the best shape of his life. There is no question about that, because Lutsar will do him no favors. Lutsar will go in there to try and murder him. And if Satari isn't 100% ready, he is going to get hurt. Seriously hurt. So now, let's look at the Chinese Ivan Drago Lutsar. And mind you, the Ivan Drago nickname isn't my creation. It was given to Lutsar by Eddie Bravo when Eddie was commentating the 30th anniversary Openweight Grand Prix last year, which Lutsar won. And I think it's an apt nickname, because like Drago, Lutsar seems invincible. Like Ivan Drago, Lutsar seems to be a machine, not a man. And here's a machine that is downloading updates every time he fights. A machine that is improving exponentially with every contest. And that's what makes Lutsar so scary. If you guys have never seen Lutsar fight before, if this is maybe your first time tuning into the K1 Battlecast podcast, please go on YouTube. Type in his name, L-I-U, Lutsar, C-E, and watch his fight so far. You are going to see an extraordinary athlete who is hell-bent on destroying, absolutely destroying opponents. You're going to see an Ivan Drago of kickboxing. The first thing you notice about Lutsar is his height. He's listed as 191 centimeters, but I really think he's taller than that. And it's not until you stand next to Lutsar that you realize just how bloody tall the guy is. And I do wonder if that physicality may play psychologically against Satari when they stand toe-to-toe in the ring at Yoyogi on July 7. I will never forget when Ray Sefo fought Bada Hari and lost to Bada Hari many moons ago. After the fight, I asked Ray how it was to fight Bada and just how powerful Bada really is, because, you know, back then, Bada had been knocking out everybody. Ray said to me that Bada was super powerful, but the most jolting thing about fighting Bada Hari, said Ray, was his size. Ray said to me, "Brother, I didn't realize how big Bada is until I stood in front of him in the ring. It's a quote I've never forgotten. And it's one that I've, over the years, I've heard other fighters say about their opponents. Now, even though Ray Sefo had known Bada Hari for years, and they'd been on the circuit for so long and hung out in various countries, it wasn't until they were toe-to-toe in the center of the ring that Ray realized just how enormous Hari is. And I think in a way, that allowed Bada Hari to move inside Ray's head rent-free. I do wonder if the same will happen to Satari on July 7. I really do. I do wonder if once they're head-to-head, will Satari look up and realize that Lutsar is bigger than he contemplated? And I'm telling you, folks, now this may sound weird, but I really believe that some fighters appear bigger when they're in go mode. I don't know how to explain it. Again, when I interviewed Bada Hari in Amsterdam for The Voice Versus on Access TV years ago, we were going to do a stunt at the end of the show where I held a kick shield and let Bada kick it at full force so the fans watching on TV could, you know, almost feel the power of a Bada Hari kick. Now, I was all ready to go through with it until I stood toe-to-toe with Bada. I looked into his eyes and I saw his eyes change. I saw killer Bada Hari emerge. And I don't know, again, it sounds weird, but I'm telling you, it seemed like Bada Hari enlarged right in front of me. And I said, hell no. I said, hell no. I let Mike Passanier take the kick. Now, Bada and I had known each other for years. We'd hung out. But it wasn't until that moment, holding that kick shield, waiting for Bada to kick me, that I felt scared of him. Even though we were mates, we were friends, I felt scared. I realized how huge he is. And I saw his eyes change. They went black, like he was possessed. Now, Lutsar is a really nice guy outside the ring. But in the ring, his eyes also change. He goes into murderer mode. It's scary. Not every fighter has this almost demonic switch they throw when they're about to fight. Bada Hari had it. Peter Ertz had it. Jerome Labana had it. Melvin Manoff, oh my gosh, did he have it. And I'm telling you guys, Lutsar has it. I can sit here all day and wax lyrical about Lutsar's technique. It's exquisite. His leg kicks are precise. They're fast. They're vicious. He moves like a middleweight. He can take a knock. He uses his height. He has tremendous speed and volume. And in his last fight against Cena, we saw Lutsar use his boxing primarily. He outboxed Cena. And that really surprised me because when he stormed through three opponents in one night to win the 30th anniversary Openweight Grand Prix, Lutsar did that almost exclusively through leg kicks. To think that he's trained up his hands to be as equally potent as his legs is scary, man. Like I said, this Chinese monster is evolving. If he puts on size, if he gets up to 100, 105 kilos, we are going to see an absolute kickboxing serial killer. I'm not going to break down the technique anymore, though, because I don't think July 7 is going to be about technique. Mahmoud Satari is a smart guy. He will be studying Lutsar's videos like a high school, you know, like a high schooler cramming for exams. But how does Satari prepare for the mental game? That's what I want to know. How can he be ready once he's toe-to-toe with this Chinese skyscraper on July 7? When he looks up into those demon eyes of Lutsar, when he sees Lutsar flick the switch from nice guy to murderer, how will Satari handle it? This is the big key to this fight as far as I'm concerned. There is no way that Satari ruffles Lutsar's psychological feathers. Just won't happen. But how will Satari stay unruffled? I can't wait, Jonathan, to see what goes down in Tokyo on July 7 between these two.
Well, no matter which way you slice it, Sattari has a tremendous challenge ahead of him. But, you know, sometimes the greater the challenge, the greater the resources and the reserves that people can draw on. And I certainly give him, you know, a chance.
I agree. And any way you look at it, it is going to be awesome.
All right. Well, let's get into the interview with Mahmoud Sattari. He's the current K1 Cruiserweight Champion and the second Crush Cruiserweight Champion. This is our interview with Mahmoud Sattari. We hope you enjoy. Mahmoud Sattari, welcome to K1 Battlecast.
Hello, Jonathan. I'm happy to be here and nice to see you, Mahmoud.
It's good to finally get a chance to meet you, or virtually, because we're connected via the
internet. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Well, let's get started then. So first of all, you're training in Japan now. And for those who are not familiar, when did you come to Japan and why did you choose Japan to train in?
Actually, I came into Japan 2020 because, you know, the K1 was a dream for us, for everyone who, but when I was a child, I just watched K1 and it was a dream to fight in such a great organizations in the world and show yourself to the world, prove yourself that you have that skills, just you need a chance to show yourself. So that was a big goal and big dream for me. And I came here in 2022 and keep continuing.
So yeah. You had a chance to, say, train in other countries other than Japan, or you just came straight to Japan because this is the land of K1 and you wanted to be close to that?
No, I actually trained in Thailand and also a little bit of time in China, in Netherlands, and in Sweden. Yeah, I trained in different places.
So what was it that brought you to Japan, say, rather than one of those other locations?
The strongest one was I got that opportunity to show myself. So I decided to stay here because of that. I got that opportunity and I think, yeah, that it's time to show myself here. That's a good opportunity to use that and catch it and go for it.
So I've seen quite a few of your fights and you've had a string of KO wins, been very successful against Japanese fighters, and most notably winning the cruiserweight title in 2022. How did you create that success for yourself?
It was because of the motivation, my goal, and also the things that I never give up. I just want to be the number one and I just want to be the best in the world. So that gave me that motivation to never give up and just go forward for the fight.
What is it about your style that's allowed you to have such success in your fights?
You know, so I'm still a learner. Okay, I'm still learning. But also in that time, I did a good job at training and training was good. I pushed myself to do my best, but I still learn and my style is need to get complete, you know. So how can I say that? That was a good time that I showed myself. And also I had a fight with the fighters from other countries.
In the last couple of years, have you had any other fights with fighters from overseas other than, say, Istrate or Latescu, was it?
Yes, yes. No, unfortunately, no.
And so it's been you had a bit of a struggle with those two fighters. What do you think it was that was made it difficult to adjust for you in those fights?
I'm not the kind of person who make excuses. I don't want to make excuses, but because of some issues, that fight doesn't go well for me.
Okay. Well, then what are the challenges, I guess, in Japan that you've faced, and how are you addressing that?
So, you know, once you go to the other country, because that is not your home country, it makes lots of challenges for you. For example, a good team for training. Or even living, or even how to live, how to survive how to get strong. You know, everything is a challenge for you, but as I told you, I'm a learner. I learn and I just calculate everything and make everything comfortable for myself. So right now I'm in a good situation and I'm happy for that. And I find myself again, you know.
Yeah, I mean, living in a foreign country, for those listeners who have not experienced that, I mean, anything from something as simple as going shopping at the supermarket becomes more difficult, yes. Right?
Yes.
And so there's these other adjustments that you have to make in your personal lifestyle outside of the ring.
Yeah, and especially in Japan, you have to learn the Japanese, or, you know, the English, it doesn't enough.
So yeah,
you need to learn Japanese. You need to work more harder than the usual people that they're working for themselves.
I can totally, totally sympathize with that. I've lived in Japan for 26 years now, and it's been a real adjustment on many levels and many different adjustments, right?
Yes, I know.
Yeah, yeah. So I can totally understand.
It's a challenge for you.
Yeah, yeah. So you made this really interesting move on March 20th. You called out the champion Lutsa. Your fellow countryman Sina Karimian had a bit of a struggle in the ring that day, and you said, "Hey, I'm gonna call you out." What was your motivation to challenge the champion like that?
Actually, I wait for this title for a long time. And that was a good chance for me, because even the Luce, he's a good champion. He's a good fighter. He has his skills. He has the ability. Right now, he's a champion. But in my mind, I believe in myself. I believe in my skills. And I believe that I'm a better fighter. So I decide to go inside the ring and challenge him. And absolutely, that's going to be a good fireworks, our fight. I believe in that.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine that it's going to go three rounds either way. You're such an aggressive fighter, and he's a very aggressive fighter. I don't see a lot of long-term strategy. I think there are going to be fireworks. That's something to look forward to. He's a very good boxer, and he's got great kicks. How do you plan on defending against that, or what's your strategy, if you don't mind?
Actually, I studied this guy with my team right now. So I have a good team. So I studied this guy with my team, and we're training for that. But, and you guys will see what will happen in that day.
Yeah, I don't expect you to reveal to us your fight plan, but have you found any holes in his armor?
Everybody has hole, you know? Everybody's not complete. So, and also me, I'm not complete, but I try to be complete. So, yeah, we're going to show a good performance.
What kind of strategy do you think he's going to come with against you?
I don't care about that, because I'm just preparing for everything that he put on the table. I'm just get myself ready and put myself in a situation that be ready for everything that he puts on the table. I'm ready for that. If I don't believe in that, that doesn't make sense. So I'm going for the victory. I believe in myself, and I believe in my abilities. I believe that I can win this fight.
After the win against Lusa, what's your next destination? Who is another fighter that you're hoping to face?
You know, but in my mind, absolutely, there is some fights that I think about them. But right now, I just focus 100% on this fight. And I don't want to think about the other fighters or what will happen or something like that. I just focus on this fight, and I will be 100%, 400% come to the ring and show and prove again myself, you know, to myself.
Kind of moving away from the K1 of today and maybe taking a look back, you said that you were a big fan of K1. It's why you came to Japan.
Yeah.
Can you tell us some of your idols in K1 and what are some fights that really stick out in your memory?
I cannot say just one fighter be like that, because if I say just one fighter, I want to be like that, but he is the best version of himself. I cannot be him. Okay. So if, for example, somebody wants to be like me, I'm the best version of myself. Nobody can be like me 100%. So, but I just look at it, look different fighters, and try to take every good and positive points of them and shake it and make a good version of myself. Just get better.
What would you say are your greatest strengths in the ring?
I think I'm a calm fighter. I'm kind of cold and calm fighter. I like that.
Kind of unshakable spirit.
Yeah, I just don't get too much excited. I love to fight. You know, the things that I love about myself, I love to fight. And I never give up. It doesn't matter. And I show that the size doesn't matter also. I love to fight.
So you do have quite a size difference between you and Lutsa. So what's your strategy for going up against somebody like at least 10 centimeters?
9 centimeters taller than me. So as I told you, you guys will see what will happen.
You're going to keep it tightly under your sleeve. Okay.
Yeah, because I'm training for that. I told you that I'm preparing for everything that he put on table.
How often are you training these days?
Every day.
Every single day without
every
rest?
Every single day. No rest, every day. Put in a work, hard work. And I'm doing good right now. I'm happy.
I believe that Lutsa had an injury and that the fight on the 7th may be postponed. Have you heard any word about that?
Yeah, unfortunately, I just heard that he got injured in his hands.
Yeah.
The fight is postponed to the September. The things that I heard, yeah, the September 29th.
Does that kind of pushback affect you at all? I mean, you were looking forward to a certain date and now it's been pushed into the future. How does that feel to have to wait a little longer?
Actually, I look forward to fighting 7th of July, but things happen and we should accept that. He's also a fighter. He's training. He can injure. I can get injured. So I take it as a complaint and put more work in and get more ready for this fight.
You saw him fight on the 20th of March. What did you think about his fight against Cena?
He did a good job. His performance was good. His movement was good. So he's a good fighter. And I know that this fight gonna be good fireworks.
What made you want to call him out?
Actually, from the first, I really would like to fight with the high-level fighters. Because once, if you want to be the best, you have to beat the best. You know, so he showed that he has that ability. He's a good fighter. He's a high-level fighter. For me, I'm just want to fight with him. And that's going to be a good fight. I know that. I told that everybody around me that know that I love to fight. But right now, I just want to fight with the high-level fighters. You know what I mean? Because if you want to show yourself, you have to beat the best. So we're going to the fight, and I'm getting ready for this fight. I'm ready mentally. And also, I've worked myself on my physics and everything.
Mahmoud Sattari, it has been such a pleasure to interview you today. If you could just give a message to the fans, what is it that you want to accomplish in the K1 ring against Lutsa going forward? Let us know.
I want to thank to all the fans from all over the world who supported me. So because of the fans, I'm going to fight because of my fans, because of my family, because of everybody who supported me, you know. That's a big responsibility for me. And I just wanted to do it right. And I promised to all the fans that I would put everything that I have. I would sacrifice everything and I will put my 100, 200% of myself. So, and I'm going to win this fight and dedicate this victory to everybody who supported me.
Amazing. Mahmoud Sattari, thank you so much for joining us on K1 Battlecast.
Thank you. That was a big pleasure for me. And thank you for inviting me.
Well, certainly looking forward to the fight between him and Lutsa on whenever it happens. I think we talked about July 7th, but looks like Lutsa might be recovering. So we will get you the most accurate, up-to-date information about when that fight's going to be as soon as we have it. But in the meantime, that was our interview with Mahmoud Sattari. All right, moving on, we have a listener question. This time, Reese from Edmonton asks, which K1 fighter would have had the best chance of beating Mike Tyson in Tyson's prime in a boxing contest? What do you have to say, Michael?
Reese, mate, thank you for your question. And I'm going to answer this one quickly. During Mike Tyson's prime, in a boxing match, no K1 fighter would have beaten Mike. Not one of them. That's a fact. If anyone disputes this answer, please go to the local market, visit the fish section, buy yourself a nice big fat juicy trout, take it home, unwrap that wet trout, and proceed to slap yourself repeatedly across the face with that wet fish. In a boxing match, no K1 fighter would beat Mike Tyson. For that matter, no K1 fighter would beat a prime Ali in boxing. No K1 fighter would beat a prime George Foreman in boxing. No K1 fighter would beat a prime Lennox Lewis in boxing. And no K1 fighter would beat prime Evander. And, well, let's fast forward 30 years. No K1 fighter would beat a prime Alexander Usyk or a prime Tyson Fury in boxing. It just wouldn't happen. Yes, okay, there is always what they call a puncher's chance. But come on, let's be serious. No K1 fighter is beating any of these guys in their prime in boxing. Why not? Because you're talking two different sports, two different rule sets, two different sets of training requirements, two different sets of footwork, of distancing, of timing, and defense. It's completely different. Would the world squash champion beat prime Djokovic in a tennis match? No. Would the world's best cricket team beat the World Series champions in a baseball game? No. Would the Brazilian beach soccer team beat the Brazilian national football team in a match at the Maracanã? No. Would the Olympic marathon winner beat Usain Bolt in a 100-meter sprint? No. Do I need to go on? No matter what fantasy you may have in your mind that prime Branko Cicatic would give prime Mike Tyson a run for his money, or that prime Ernesto Hoost would be a challenge for prime Lennox Lewis in boxing. It is strictly a fantasy. Now, if it's a kickboxing match, things change. If it's a Muay Thai match, things change. But in a boxing match, a prime Mike Tyson thoroughly beats any prime K1 fighter. As for which K1 fighter would have had the best chance, well, against a prime Mike Tyson boxing, it comes down to which K1 fighter could have maybe weathered the storm the longest against Tyson. And the answer to that question is Mark Hunt. Mark Hunt had the best chin of any K1 champion in history. Mark Hunt probably could have worn Mike Tyson's punches the most. Mark Hunt probably could have landed a few on the inside of his own as well. But he wouldn't have beaten Mike Tyson in boxing in Tyson's prime. But to answer your question specifically, Reese, the best chance for any K1 fighter against Tyson in his prime would have been Mark Hunt. Good question. Simple answer. Jonathan, I was scrolling through social media last night and I came across another, what could be an interesting hint as to the wild card for July 7. Now, last week, I very heavily speculated that the wild card could be Giorgio Petrosian, given that Kancho Ishii had been in Milan the week before at Giorgio's own Petrosian Mania event, where Petrosian won his fight, his comeback fight, after a two-year absence. Ishii was there. And I speculated, surely they were talking, surely Kancho Ishii made Giorgio Petrosian an offer to be a part of the K1 Max, to be the wild card, to fight Ouyang Feng, to go for an historic third K1 Max championship. My suspicions for this wild card selection were dampened a little, I mean, about it being Petrosian, were dampened a little a couple of days after our podcast was released, because I started seeing these posts out of Thailand, and I believe they may have been from Buakaw's camp, saying that Buakaw was going to be the wild card. There was even a poster that was released online. Now, it was most likely released by Buakaw's own camp. I don't think it was an official K1 poster that had Buakaw's name and photo in that slot. It showed the bracket. It showed the big angel wings K1 Max graphic they're using. And it had Buakaw's name and his photo matched up against Ouyang Feng, completing the bracket as the wild card. But of course, no official word from K1. So I started thinking, all right, are we leaning back towards Buakaw? Because I was pretty confident it was going to be Giorgio. Then I saw that online. I'm thinking, do the Thais know something that we don't? Has that, you know, are they trying to create their own destiny? Are the Thais, is Buakaw trying to create his own destiny by putting out a mock poster and declaring that their guy is the guy, that Buakaw is going to be the wild card? Then, Jonathan, as I said, I was scrolling through social media last night. I'm on Facebook, and I happened across the Facebook page of Carlos Cucuta, who, of course, is the head of K1. And this is interesting. There is a photo of Carlos Cucuta on his Facebook page standing next to the ambassador of the Republic of Armenia. The ambassador, whose name, I'll try not to butcher this, Ambassador Bovacinian. Just let me read the caption first. It just says, "Thank you very much, Ambassador Bovacinian of the Republic of Armenia. Ambassador Bovacinian of the Republic of Armenia, thank you for your time." That is what Carlos Cucuta wrote on his Facebook. Accompanying that is the photo. Now, this is interesting. The ambassador of Armenia is holding a photo of Zora Akopian. Carlos Cucuta is holding a photo of the K1 World Max poster. Does this also suggest, having visited with the Armenian ambassador, that he was speaking about the possibility of not one, but two Armenians coming into this K1 Max? Akopian is already there. Could the other one come in, which would be Giorgio Petrosian? This wildcard idea, while it's frustrating to fans and we're all eager to find out who it's going to be, is also so interesting to talk about because every week it changes. Folks, I'm telling you, a few weeks ago, Marek Grigorian was right up there. Chingiz Alazov was right up there. Then it was Buakaw. Then it was Giorgio Petrosian. Then it went back to Buakaw. Now it's swung back to Petrosian. You just don't know. Jonathan, that's what makes it so intriguing.
Well, it's such a sensitive matter because you have to balance everyone's desires and their thoughts about what things should be, right? And if you have all these big name fighters that you're approaching, to kind of favor one and against another or over another, I mean, it's like trying to ask five people out to a dance on the same night. You got to be pretty careful when you're approaching multiple people. I'm not saying that that K1 Max is a dance, and if it is, it's a dance of death. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on behind the scenes, and if the walls could talk, oh my gosh, the stories that they would tell in the halls of K1. There's a lot going on. I wish I could be more forthright, but I just can't because the mystery is alive.
Either way, it is set to be whatever the announcement is, and I think it's going to be either Buakaw or Petrosian, one or the other, and either one would suit me just fine for very different reasons. And when it is announced, we will break it down. I'll give you my reasons why I would love Buakaw, why I would love Petrosian, and their genuine chances should it be either one of those guys in. I'm almost going to guarantee they've both been made offers. I can pretty much say that without a shadow of a doubt that both Petrosian and Buakaw have been offered a place in this K1 Max. Don't know after that what has gone on. We will find out shortly.
Well, the entertainment for today's episode just keeps on coming in. It has been a crazy full episode. We still have our interview with Javad Potrak, which we're going to play for you now. So let's get into it.
Javad, you're an old school K1 fighter. How many fights did you have in K1 and how many fights in your career overall?
Hello, my friend. Best regards from Bosnia to you. Behind me in my career, I have 19-4 of professional fights. A lot of fights with K1 roles and a lot of fights in Japan, Tokyo, Seoul, Hong Kong, and other countries.
Who was your favorite K1 fighter?
I love all fighters. Many of them were real samurai. It is very difficult to single out someone. I love the style of Ernesto Host, Ray Sefo, Peter Arts, Mike Bernardo, Sam Greco, Francisco Filho.
What was the best K1 fight you ever saw?
Definitely it was a fight between Mark Hunt and Ray Sefo. That was a very hard fight and I liked this style.
Javad, you're going to host the first K1 Grand Prix event in 14 years. How do you feel about this huge honor?
Yes, I feel fantastic and happy for this position. I have a lot of work to do, but everything is going well.
Why the choice of Sarajevo as the host city?
Sarajevo is an Olympic city because it hosted the Winter Olympic Games for 84 years. It is a city with many good people. There are a lot of athletes and good sportsmen. Arena Scandinavia give us many good kickboxing fighters. Because of that things, we expect a full hall and good atmosphere in big Arena Scandinavia.
Javad, tell me about the 8 fighters in the K1 Sarajevo Grand Prix and who are the favorites?
I'm glad that we have put together a good team of fighters, real warriors. I think the tournament will be good. It's hard to say who is the favorite.
It really seems like this old lions versus young tigers tournament. Would you agree?
Mostly they are young fighters, but there are a few who are from the old guard, Adnan Rajovic and Igor Mihaljevic. The older ones always wanted to beat up the younger fighters. The war rests on the young. June 29, Rajovic will try to beat them all. He is the champion and my favorite, but other fighters are good too.
Javad, tell me about the venue, the arena for K1 Grand Prix in Sarajevo.
Sarajevo is an Olympic city. It is a city of sports and good people. Many fighters, trainers, and promoters come to our Sarajevo. My team has always worked hard to be recognized in K1 sport. It was not easy, but we have big success.
Are there going to be any special guests in Sarajevo, like K1 legends of the past?
For now, for Sarajevo K1 Grand Prix, I don't know, maybe. Maybe we have a lot of good champions, but for now I cannot give you some good answer, but I have a lot of friends around and we will see.
Finally, Javad, can you give a message to the fans worldwide who are eagerly looking forward to K1 World Grand Prix in Sarajevo?
Please come to Sarajevo. Please come to Olympic City. given to emotion and support K1. K1 is back.
Jibad Puttarak, thanks for your time, brother. Well, there you have it, folks. That brings us to the end of another episode of K1 Battlecast. Jonathan, we could not possibly cram any more into this episode.
My fingers are exhausted. Yeah, it actually didn't all fit in, so I had to leave some of it on the floor, but those are the breaks.
And we'll be back again next week. Until then, folks, make sure you follow us on social media. Drop us a line. As always, I'll try and answer your questions as best I can each and every week and peek behind the veil of K1 to give you guys the inside word. Until then, I'm Michael Schiavello.
And I'm Jonathan Scheer.
Thanks for joining us on K1 Battlecast.
Please join us each and every Friday. We drop our episodes generally around 5 o'clock, but sometimes, you know, when we've got a million things to put in the show, it's a little bit later. What can I say? We have socials. We're on X, Instagram, Facebook, all the good ones, and some of the bad ones. We're also, we've got an email address where you can drop us your questions. We'd love to hear from you. And let us know what you think of the show. What do you want to hear about? Who do you want us to interview? What kind of questions do you have about K1's past, its present, or its future? Let us know. We hope to hear from you. All right, everyone, have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next time.